welcome to the Inspired Intentions podcast with Skytera Wellness. If you've been too busy and not taking care of yourself, it's time to reset habits and plunge into your new normal. Jeff back here today with Rachel, and we are super excited for this topic. It's going to be a brilliant time of year to really dive into it today.
Hi, Jeff.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
It's always so nice to see you.
You too. You know, I am excited about this topic, but I am extra excited about the guest.
This guest is pretty cool.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah. Yep. I think I happen to live with this guest.
Yeah. Very lucky.
Wow.
Let's introduce her. So this is Lindsay Ford. Hi, Lindsay.
Hello.
Lindsay is the lead dietitian at Skytera, and she also happens to be Jeff's wife.
Yep. Woo-woo. It's official. Quite some time now.
How long have you guys been married?
Just over 4 years. Just super, super long.
The accuracy is impeccable.
Right.
But I'm excited today because we are going to ditch the diet mentality. And Lindsay's going to tell us how to do it. And I think this is really important, especially now this time of year. We're almost through January. And I think that a lot of people have the intention of starting a new year with some kind of changes to their eating. And it seems like diets, everyone's always talking about diets.
There's always that next best thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So Lindsay's going to help us with that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think like before we get into kind of the meat, no pun intended, of this ditch diet mentality topic today is to really understand that food is information. And somewhere along the way, we tend to favor those quick things we're told or those quick fixes that might finally get us over to the edge of where we need to be. Lindsay, could you tell us about just how you look at diets and just a little perspective from your point of view?
I think that's a great thing to just start off with, because a good question is just, okay, what is a diet? Like, what does that even mean? So I think first, originally when people use the word diets or diet, it was supposed to mean what we consume just on a daily basis. But that's definitely not what it is today. I'd say mostly people think of it as more restrictive, deprivational. I also like to think of it as when we start to make irrational food rules that really make no sense to our lives, and then those tend to take over. And so within that, you have all different types of diets that would fall then into the restrict, the deprive, irrational rules, and we could go on for days probably how many out there truly is.
Mm-hmm.
And Lindsay, what is your story? How did you get into the work that you do, and how long have you been at Skytera?
Oh, gosh. So my story kind of goes back a while ago, and originally I was never super interested in nutrition. I was more interested in exercise science, and it sparked just from me playing college soccer, and I got recruited to play to Ball State University in good old Muncie, Indiana. And I grew up in a household where food was never demonized. It was never shamed. It was food. And I also have a perfectionist tendency, personality.
Not you, Lindsay.
No way.
And so going into play my freshman year of college, I really wanted to play. Like, I wanted to participate. I wanted to be involved. And so, unfortunately, I internalized a message of basically fat from food making me fat. And I thought that I had to be super, super lean for my sport, which I was already lean, but I was like, well, let's take it to the next level. So I cut out fat from my diet and ended up getting to an unfortunate, 106 pounds. That was like my lowest.
And how tall are you, Lindsay?
I'm 5'8".
Yeah, you're pretty tall.
Yeah. Technically 5'7½", but you know, we'll just say 5'8".
You always scale up when someone asks you your height.
Just scaling up.
Especially like our executive producer, he always tells us how much taller he is than he actually is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good old Alan.
Yeah.
Always scale up. So based off of like that weight and that height, I was not healthy. So the thing that I did have going for me is that I could at least look at myself in the mirror and not see health. Like, I knew I was sick, but I couldn't figure out how to get out of it. And so through support, a lot of support, and through even my teammates were phenomenal. I was able to break out of that, but it was really starting with this low fat diet and getting just really, it just sparked everything.
And I think that's really powerful too, because for people who know you, Lindsay, you're athletic and you are just a very healthy person. You have a really good balance and a perspective on eating and nutrition. And I think it's good for people to hear that it took you a while to get to the place where you're at.
Yeah, it took a while because from a health side, I had to restore weight. I had to eat beyond comfort in order to put the weight back on. Like it was actually kind of miserable, which some may not look at it that way. It's like, oh, you get to eat all this food. Well, there was the mental side of it, the emotional side, and then there was also the like physical discomfort. And once I got to that place of being, let's just say, restored weight-wise, there was this just, okay, well, how do I eat normally? So then that question came into play.
How did you deal with that?
So that took time as well. But I'd say the biggest thing was taking more of, okay, what is my body actually saying? Because I was doing that all the way up until the point of me starting the diet. I would just listen to what, if I was hungry, I would eat. When I was full, I would stop. And then it's like going out with friends. And if I wanted to order the cheeseburger, I would get the cheeseburger. If I wanted to order the salad, I would get the salad. Like it just kind of, it was very, I'd say more of that intuitive style of eating.
When you were kind of rebounding from your experience.
Yeah. So before the diet, I'd say I was an intuitive eater. And then I knew that that's the way I wanted to work back towards.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's almost like in your story specifically, fat became the villain for a little while.
Yeah.
And I think that's interesting in nutrition and diets in general, as there always seems to be
a good guy
and a bad guy. When you look at diets through history and just how they've evolved, that was a very common time where fat was the villain. And it sounds mm-hmm. like why you were expressing how it was actually difficult to eat more food and to put food back into your life in the way you did is because it was extremely hard because that food was the villain. And the food that you're putting back into your body, you had to like mentally overcome a lot for that to be possible.
You must have to fight what your body is saying. Like fight in a degree of like, so I could use another example of, let's just say, somebody uses alcohol. Well, okay, they have to fight if their mind is saying to go there. You have to physically, there's so many other things, but coping differently. And I had to basically fight what my body was saying in that restoration process and just do it.
Lindsay, do you feel like that experience has helped you when you're working with clients?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't share my story that often with clients. It can be a touchy subject because I wouldn't want to spark anything for any other person. So I will only go there if it seems appropriate. But it is something that typically I can empathize a lot and also sympathize with what people are going through and some of the thoughts that come up and some of the behavior choices that just kind of linger. Yeah.
It's almost like you've had a tough road. It may not be you've necessarily had to lose weight, but it's a similar relationship in that, man, like I just want to be able to eat food again and enjoy it. And I think with food and diets in general, there's so many expectations of how you should eat. And that expectation changes almost every year. And I think a statistic that's always blown my mind is like the average female these days starts thinking about their weight at the age of 8 years old. And so it's really astonishing how this is definitely just as much like a mental game as it is a physiological game, like figuring out the foods that are going to work best for each of us.
Oh, 100. And our culture doesn't help it. So if we go into that diet culture, there's so much pressure out there. And if someone doesn't have strong body image or I mean, there's so many different variables, but it's so easy to take one thing and it just completely gets out of hand.
Let's get into that a little bit more. So would you say that we're a society obsessed with diet culture?
100%.
Yeah.
Body weight, body shape, size, fat, skinny. There's actually kind of a, I think it's kind of cool, but some would challenge it, is to almost like re-embrace the word fat, because it's been so shamed for so long that it's like, well, what if we actually just like called it what it is, instead of having all of this mm-hmm. negative language and perspective on it.
Yeah, the connotation is like immediately negative.
Yes.
You know, even when you do like attitude tests, which are just simple tests of going through pictures of individuals, we have subliminal meanings to the word fat, and we don't even realize almost the discrimination we have around it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's, I heard this story once and I just loved it, where a woman and her child, really close bond, and this child goes to school, and I guess the way the teacher set up these tests, it would ask just a broad question at the beginning of the test. And the one question this one particular day was, what if someone called your mother fat? And the teacher ended up calling mom. And the teacher was like, I really learned something from your child today. And it was a two-word response of, so what?
Mm. That's powerful.
Like, that's really powerful. But yeah, our culture is like, it's a huge problem.
Maybe 1 out of 10 children would have said that, or 1 out of 10 people, maybe, if we're lucky.
Yeah.
Wow.
So let's talk about dieting specifically. I've heard you say before that dieting can do more harm than good. And the title of this podcast is How to Ditch the Diet Mentality. So what does that mean? How can, you know, a strict adherence to following some kind of diet, how can that be harmful to people?
So there's a lot. So one thing I'd say, big picture, is it doesn't address the root issues. So if there's a lot of root, like underlying, I'd say more therapeutic emotional stuff going on, like it's not going to address that. But so often people might go into dieting thinking it's going to make them happier, because usually dieting is a way to, let's just say, lose weight. So there is completely not actually addressing the real issues. It can increase food fixation. So when we restrict, deprive, as humans, we naturally will just fixate more on those things. And then if we talk about eating behaviors, it can actually increase the risk of binge eating, overeating later on. It typically, I mean, if we've got somebody that's been yo-yoing their entire life, it can cause a lot of stress and inflammation on the body. And then we have typically, I mean, most people that try to attempt to lose weight, they will gain it back and more. And so there's that psychological damage too, of feeling like a failure constantly because it's not working. And so what I like to at least encourage people to think about is, it's not them that failed, it's the diets that have failed them.
That's mm-hmm. powerful, Lindsay.
Yeah. I think like some folks will be like, oh, when I used to eat that way, I was at a lighter weight. And I think when you think of diets, like a diet doesn't truly work, or it's not a way of eating if like the weight came back. So not that to say that it's all weight driven, but that's a symptom of whether the way we're executing on our nutrition is going to work over the long term, where diets are kind of finite and changing that relationship can be infinite, where we don't look at those foods in the same way with like that villain picture on it.
Oh yeah. And I think what you said there, symptom, is really huge, because for each person, they might have different symptoms based off of even whatever diet they try. Mm-hmm. And weight happens to be one of those big symptoms that people resonate right away with. But there's so many other symptoms. I mean, mental health being a huge component of that, but even like social health being another variable of like, okay, now you have somebody that might be isolating themselves all the time because they feel like they can't go out or participate. It's like, well, that's not helpful either.
Mm-hmm. Numerous variables.
Yeah.
Lindsay, can you say a little bit more about, we talk a lot on this podcast about the why behind things. Can you say more about maybe emotional reasons behind why someone would choose to diet and how that may not be addressing what's really at the root of the issue?
Yeah. So that's a big one. I like it. You know, it could be a way to try to gain control. If other things start to feel out of control, what we do put in our bodies can be a form of control and feeling like we are taking charge of something. It could also be a way to, if we're talking, it could also be a way to cope of, okay, which is kind of the same thing as trying to take control, but a way to not really deal with, let's say, trauma in someone's life. So there's this other thing that I can do that could potentially help or make me feel more at ease, make me feel kind of like de-stressed in a sense. And a lot of it has to do with how our brain operates, and there's a lot of physiological stuff there. But yeah, ultimately, the diet is just kind of replacing an unmet need of some sort.
Yeah.
And it could be any diet. So for some, it could be keto. For some, it could be, and I don't want to pick on any one particular diet because, shoot, 2 years from now, there's going to be like a million more.
Well, I think to reflect on what you just said was interesting, where the from a diet perspective, people really tend to always go after that next best thing. However, I was just kind of thinking about the stance of how it does more harm than good as well. And we get caught in this cycle of kind of figuring out how to really find something that's going to work. And everyone's always after something that is going to work. But in actuality, we don't even know why we're doing the diet in the first place. So what this was leading to is this thought that people don't even know why they're trying to control something, as in we haven't identified the root cause. I think it's difficult to even be like, oh, I may be eating this way because of this. So I think oftentimes folks don't even know why they may turn to a diet. And that's almost the first step. So you don't treat the symptom. The problem is what we're not dealing with and how the food becomes something we can control.
Yeah, I think that's super wise. Because if you don't know what the root issues are, then it's very easy to fall into any sort of diet after diet. And it usually is, there's something that we're not happy with. We're not content. We're not okay with ourselves in some shape or form. And so we seek these other avenues, diet and exercise being huge components. And if we don't actually take time to reflect and be like, why am I even doing this? Then we're just going to keep doing it.
Lindsay, finding that why, you know, why I keep seeking a new diet, is that something that our listeners could do on their own? And do you have any tips for them on how they would do that? I would understand that maybe, I know in our Freedom with Food program, for example, we couple your dietitian expertise with a therapist. So sometimes therapy is included in finding that why. But before we get to that, do you have any tips for people on how they can figure that out?
Yeah, I'd say if we take the therapeutic piece out of it and we look at just the nutrition side and the food piece, something that I would encourage people to look at is just like their history. And so going back in time and actually thinking about, when was that first diet I'd ever tried? Was it self-imposed or did somebody impose it upon you? Oftentimes, it was not imposed by themselves. It was actually, maybe they went to the doctor's office and they're 10, 12 years old and they're told by their doctor, you need to lose weight, and it sparks everything. Or it could be mom isn't happy with how weight is progressing. And so you've got a parent all of a sudden influencing, which it's already been influenced, but now playing a huge role in maybe restricting, which I'm sure mom is not trying to harm their child.
Right.
And yet it can actually cause a lot of harm because if we're taking that 10 to 12 year old, which that's just a common age I hear, mm-hmm. which is just really sad. But that's puberty. Like, it's time where things just get awkward. Like, we're supposed to grow, like fat accumulates. And yet there's this degree of discomfort. And so that's when a lot of diets start. So taking like an inventory of, okay, when was my first diet I ever tried? Did I choose to do that? Did somebody put that on me? And then kind of going from there, like, what have I noticed? What other diets have I tried? Was I able to stop that badness? maybe just because it doesn't make sense for me. I've heard that too, where people have been put on diets and they realized, I just don't like this. Mm-hmm. But more often than not, especially with women, if it started young, it tends to escalate and it's something that they battle with their whole life.
Hmm. I think that's super telling. Like, our earliest experience around food definitely can dictate how we operate like later in life. And it can be influenced from social, environmental, you know, familial relationships. And I think what you alluded to is to look at where you were, almost create some more awareness around the past so that the future can be different.
Yeah. And even looking at how food was, the perception around food growing up. I mean, we, by the age of 3, were already making connection with food and emotion. So as toddlers, we're seeking power and control. And so if food was always given with joy, anger, sadness, I mean, that could show up later on where every single emotion, now we want food to soothe.
Food becomes like almost a reward depending on what's happening in our life as right. well.
So there's that component. And then you take somebody that maybe grew up in a food insecure home, which I hear this more often than, I mean, it's really sad. If there's always this sense of, I don't know when my next meal is going to be, then feeling hunger is a scary feeling. Feeling deprived would be a scary feeling. And so that sparks other things later on in life.
Let's keep going on that. So I think I've often heard you speak about this, Lindsay, and other professionals, where I think there's a difference between head hunger and physiological hunger. Could you help our listeners figure out how do they start to learn the difference between the two?
I love that. Okay. So hunger is a great thing. And I think that's where, first, if we can at least be like, hey, that's a good thing. It's a positive thing. Great. So it's a physiological cue that our body says, hey, it's time to eat. Energy is low. Each person probably feels this subtly different. So for some, they could feel like their stomach start to growl. For others, they might just feel low energy. For some, I've heard it like feels like their chest gets tight. It can depend, but let's just say there is a physiological need to eat food. Energy needs to be elevated. With hunger, there typically also comes appetite. So when we're hungry, you might, even if you're just like around family, friends, they might say, hey, what are you in the mood for if you're hungry? We tend to gravitate towards something. So appetite is maybe this like desire for food. So with hunger, we probably always have some degree of appetite. Where things get lost is when we have cravings or we feel like this need to eat, but there's actually no physical hunger whatsoever. Now that can be sparked by numerous things. So like stress can be a huge component. So sometimes we do need to eat even when we're not hungry.
What about the people who like skip meals and they're like, I'm not hungry?
Yeah.
That comes up a lot, right?
Yeah. So that would be a perfect example of like, hey, you have breakfast at 8. You know, you're not having dinner till 7. If we use a wise head, it would make sense from a physical perspective to have lunch in the day, even though you might be so busy and stressed that the hunger cues aren't coming through, where it tends to get problematic, as I'd say where I see most people struggle, is like the late afternoon, evening time. And all of a sudden, like the day finally is over, there's a sense of, oh, I can finally take care of myself. And there's this mix of hunger, but also very strong potential cravings and this need for probably high sugar, refined carbs, hyper palatable foods. And then before you know it, it's like the shame and the guilt kicks in because it could be either a binge, which I'd say if people truly understood a binge, more often than not, it's not a binge. It's just more of like chronic grazing throughout the night.
Could you identify and more define what a binge would be? Because I think that's an interesting concept that some folks don't even know aware or aren't aware of like an episode like that. But could you define that just a little bit more clearly?
And I think people use that word a lot.
A lot.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh my like gosh. Binge watch, Netflix. Yes. Like it's starting to kind of graze its way over to all aspects of life.
And it's a pretty harsh word, right? I mean, mm-hmm. when you think of binge, it's like, that's pretty harsh.
It's intense.
Now, here's a little fun statistic. 30% of people that diet show signs of binge eating disorder.
30%?
That's a pretty high percentage.
It's pretty mm-hmm. high.
So mm-hmm. another reason, you know, dieting can cause more harm than good is it increases the risk. So a true binge is eating a very large volume of food within typically a 2 hour or less time frame. And it could be pre-planned. So usually it's connected to this feeling of like a loss of control. And yet somebody could actually pre-plan a binge and really like set it up almost like a ritual. Afterwards, there's extreme guilt and shame that typically take over. This is not eating like the pint of ice cream. And that's what I hear. I've binged. You may have felt like it could have gone there, but a binge is probably eating, like, let's just say the entire pizza, followed by the box of crackers, followed by the jar of peanut butter, followed by anything else, like literally physical discomfort and pain.
What I also heard you say too is like usually a binge, an episode like this has more to do with there's emotions from it as well. Like there's shame, there's guilt, there's a response at the end that doesn't make the person feel super hot.
So ultimately it's not about the food.
Wow.
It's not, and yet, yeah, so it's not about the food. It's about so many, that becomes the coping mechanism or one main coping mechanism for that individual. So binge eating disorder is actually the number one eating disorder in America. 1 out of 35 adults. It's 40, 60 men, women. It's typically shows up later on in life. And it's just not really talked about. There's so much shame and guilt around it. I mean, not many people want to raise their hands and say, hey, help me. I eat this, like, this is what I do. And yeah, it's a scary thing.
If someone has gotten to the point where they recognize these behaviors as something that they've been participating in, what would you recommend that they do?
First, they need to tell someone they trust, someone they love. They need to confide in someone. I would say the second main thing, they have to go see a therapist, like seek therapeutic support. Because really, if this was something that was happening frequently, they can get treatment for it. And this is like treatment. So it could be outpatient, it could be inpatient, residential type care, and insurance can cover it.
Interesting.
Yeah. So instead of paying out of pocket, like you can get insurance coverage.
Well, and I think folks need to be careful with identifying as something. I think that's a big yeah. thing that happens around food is we try to identify as this is how I eat, this is who I am. Like when you think of all these diets that have come out in the past, couple of decades, it's like, I eat paleo, I'm a vegan, I binge eat. Like a lot of people define themselves by how they're eating. And so I think like, how do you help people remove like identification, like how they're identifying themselves with their food? So what I mean by that is like, okay, my name's Jeff. How do I come at it from a point of like not saying I eat a particular way? Because isn't that in essence breaking the diet mentality?
Yeah, because it's moralizing. It's putting food on this really high pedestal. It's idolizing food. It's not the identity of the person, but we could say that for lots of things. I remember for the longest time, I mean, I identified myself as a soccer player. That's not who I was. I played soccer, love soccer, but that's not my identity. And so we could expand that same exact thing to food. It's because of our culture is so wrapped up in food. Right now, there's this big, I mean, I see it, you can see it on social media. It's like there's all these little subgroups of, you know, vegan, keto. It's all of that stuff is very strong and apparent.
Have you guys seen those funny t-shirts? Like, I eat vegans. Those are kind of funny. And we don't discriminate against diets at Skyterra. I think that's an important thing.
No judgment.
To remember. Yeah, total judgment free. It's just ironic that we've gotten to that place. And so I guess like we should probably get some tangibility to breaking this, right?
Yeah. And I wanted to go back to before we started talking about binge eating a little bit, we were talking about hunger cues and what happens when you're hungry, what happens when you start to feel your appetite. How do you know when you should be eating?
Yeah. For some, they might not know. Like, they almost need help in figuring that out. So something that we at least encourage guests at Skyterra is, okay, can we at least start with 3 main meals a day? Can like we at least start there and not skip main meals? And that could look like different times for each person. So it could, you know, for some, maybe breakfast is at 7 a.m., but maybe for others, it's 9. But trying to keep, I'd say, pretty consistent eating patterns at first, because at some point, hopefully those cues start to become just more apparent and somebody can actually then honor it and just be more aware of, like, it almost becomes kind of predictable. I mean, not every day is going to be the exact same, but it at least gives somebody this connection of, okay, here's how my days look. And I know that around these times, it's typically important for me to eat. And they can also connect it to, and that's what my body is saying.
Wow. So it's like, start with the plan, start with a routine, get timing down, because before you have any timing, it's going to be tough to figure out the association with your hunger.
Yes. So if we're still living this very chaotic hodgepodge, wing it, it's very difficult to even know what the body is saying. So having some consistency, some they might start to really notice huge positive changes within 2 weeks. And for others, it could take months because maybe they've been dieting for years and years and years. So to expect the hunger cues and the fullness cues and everything just to become boom right there could be unrealistic.
Yeah. 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 Like, you got to give your body time to rewire its communication with your brain almost to change that relationship.
Yeah.
So I'm hearing I want to ditch diets. And the first step is to figure out why. Looking back at my history, figuring out maybe when my first diet started or when I started thinking about dieting. And then the second step I'm hearing would be setting up your 3 main meal times.
Yeah. I think that's a great step. And really, if someone needs help with that and kind of figuring that out, there's also a degree of, I mean, I've heard this before numerous times, is just the family dynamics or whoever's in your household, making sure that you're advocating, but also respecting others in the household. So, but just trying to kind of get on the same page with that.
That's crucial. Like, environment, if you're going out to a meal with people and you sit down and everybody orders a specific way, you're usually more inclined to order that way as well. So it's almost when you're bringing it into the home, you're trying to switch things up. If there's not a like cohesive unit going after, you know, trying to get more connected to hunger and to slow down when we're eating, it can be difficult to kind of do it alone as well.
Yeah, support is key. And this could also be at work. Like, if you're used to not taking a lunch break, maybe start to set that boundary of, I need 30 minutes every day to set time for lunch. And it could even be a range, but everyone deserves a 30-minute break to eat during the day. Like, that,
it's so important.
Yeah.
Lindsay, what's the eating pendulum? I've heard you talk about that before.
Oh yeah, the pendulum. Yeah, that's fun. So, I mean, if you could just visualize a pendulum, it swings back and forth. And on one side of the pendulum is restriction. So we could think more classic diet, right? And then on the right side, we have rebel, or let's take more overeating behaviors. And at the very bottom of that pendulum is intuitive eating, the most stable place we could sit. Most of the time, we're probably working with guests and people that are kind of floating back and forth to the extremes. So to get to the very bottom of the pendulum would be very challenging. So I just try to encourage people to, okay, could we at least float and swing closer to the bottom versus go to the extremes? And so taking the restrictive side, trying to get closer to intuitive eating would look like, can we break down some barriers like from an irrationality? So education, using more of a wise head, making different decisions based off of like, I hate to, just like some intelligence, like common sense, things that make sense for like your life, no one else's. And then on the right side, mindfulness is key. So slowing down, really just gaining more awareness. I think
like the slowing down piece is huge. Like you say this quite a bit and it's so powerful where it takes 20 minutes, isn't it? 20 minutes for your brain to even register that you're full.
It takes like 20 minutes for your brain to even make some connection of like, okay, this food has now entered my body. I mean, the moment we take a bite, there's already things going on, but it takes 20 minutes to really make this mind-body connection. And the average American right now is only taking roughly, I would say it's probably less, but an hour eating all of their meals, every bite of food within their day. So we're just not spending a lot of time in that eating process. And nothing great happens when you're standing in the kitchen and you're just throwing food down. I mean, and this would be like, especially if someone's not in a good mental state, head state. I mean, before you know it, the entire bag of whatever's gone. And we're just, yeah, that's a little side note, but we need to slow down.
Great side note. Slowing down is a theme for, I think, all aspects of health. The pendulum you're describing, like that is kind of what this podcast is designed to do, is to like cut through the clutter of going to extremes, because quick fixes never end the best. And when we're speeding through the day, specifically with trying to connect to food on a more intuitive level, there's always more harm than good.
Yeah. Lindsay, can you give us some really specific tips about how to slow down and eat in a more mindful way?
Yeah. So I love that. Okay. One thing I would at least put out there before the slowing down process even begins is, even because once we're actively eating food, like we're in it, but even asking, because this goes back to what Jeff was saying, like physical hunger versus, let's say, more head hunger, emotional, whatever that looks like, is asking like, what do I really need? So, okay, I need food. Cool. I'm sitting in front of the food. I would encourage people to remove technology. So putting phones away, computers away, shutting that down. I would also encourage sitting. So just the act of sitting can just bring a different degree of presence and awareness to the food. Not rushing through it, which this could be really tough, but like taking a bite, really tasting it and chewing it, slowing down, tasting it, savoring it, enjoying it. I would also take moments to ask yourself, like, how hungry am I? And then as you work through it, okay, like, what's my body saying? Am I getting full? And this is where for some, they don't know yet. And so it at least, just by slowing down, you can at least gain more awareness.
Yeah. Like pause while you're working on it.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Because even if you don't have the answers, at least you're trying to like learn more about yourself within the process.
What about the enjoyment of food?
Oh my gosh. Yes.
We haven't talked about that.
Yeah. That's so important, because food is meant to be pleasurable and enjoyable. And what's so interesting to me, so one of the questions that I'll ask folks is, okay, what is dieting taken away? And a common, so people come up with all sorts of things, and it's time, money, it's taken away social things, it's taken away health. I mean, it's taken away a lot. But one of the most powerful ones that I hear from people is that it takes away the enjoyment of food. It's like, oh, that's so strong.
Would you say that's the biggest theme? Like when you ask that question, that there's no longer enjoyment, like the majority of people have lost enjoyment.
You know what?
Food.
Most people, it's not their first thought, but then when one person says it, everyone's like, oh my gosh, yes. So it's like deep down, we want food to be enjoyable. I would hope so. I mean, from from the time we're born, like food was like, it made us happy. Yeah. It gave us comfort.
And you think about so many social aspects to it too, you know, going out to dinner with friends, holiday meals spent with your family. I mean, so much of that revolves around food, and to take that enjoyment away for people, that's a big part of the enjoyment of life that they're having removed from from diets that we've given power to.
Yeah. We were talking about this the other day. It's like when you think of, say you had one sense that was removed from your body, like you couldn't see, you couldn't hear, you couldn't taste. I think removing taste would be a kind of a tough one for me. I don't know if I would pick that one.
That's because Lindsay's a good cook.
It is. Yeah. When you're married to a dietitian, it does make working on these concepts a little bit easier. And that's definitely a check in the win column for me.
Oh yeah. You have a lot of checks in the win column.
One or two. Aww. Yeah.
You all are so sweet.
Okay. So going back to actionable steps. So I've figured out my why. I've set some specific meal times. What would you say would be the actionable step around not just being mindful, but figuring out how to start to move beyond the diet? So you've kind of put these processes in place, but how do I finally ditch that mentality for good?
So the first thing that kind of comes to my mind is ultimately, how can I respect my body more? So if we're choosing the diets because of some other unmet need, or for, so we've kind of figured that piece out, then how can we take better care of our body and our mind just in general? So to me, I think of body respect. We may not necessarily love where our body's at. Hopefully we're not in a place of like body hatred. So what can we do just to take better care of my body? And I guarantee that diets are not a part of that. So instead of restricting, instead of going down this really miserable road of unpalatable food, it's like, is that really kind to myself? No, it's really not. So I just think of body respect.
And having compassion for yourself, which we talk a lot about on the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no good or bad body. There's no good or bad food. And I think that's like a theme. That's a mentality that makes all sorts of diets go wrong.
Yeah.
And that good and bad mentality is something that we also talk about a lot on the podcast. Lindsay, how does that relate to food and eating?
Will you repeat that?
So we talk a lot about avoiding good things versus bad things and getting in and thinking about that in that way. How do you avoid thinking like, I shouldn't eat this, this is bad, or I've been good today because I didn't have cream in my coffee or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Wow, that's really restrictive, Rachel. First step, don't worry about the cream in your coffee.
That's too funny. But hey, people do.
They do. I hear it all the time.
Yeah. Yes.
We shouldn't be putting half a cup of cream in our coffee. However, it's not the thing we should probably worry about.
Should you have whipped cream on your coffee?
I don't know. We'd probably have to ask someone.
Should ask them.
Yeah, that's a phone a friend kind of question.
Yeah, phone a friend. So I like to use the language of nutrient density. So instead of saying food is good or bad, some foods just have more nutritional value than others. Because once we start labeling, then we were either good or we were bad, which isn't helpful. So like if we go into the grocery store, we kind of know, all right, the nutrient dense stuff is typically on the perimeter, fruits and veggies, da da da, we could go on for days. Whereas like the less nutrient dense stuff, yeah, we could probably find more of that in the aisles, the stuff that never molds and never goes bad. Okay. But to say I'm never going to eat that again, or I shouldn't eat that, or that's bad, it's only putting a negative perception towards food in general, which just ultimately is not helpful.
And it puts you back in that restriction camp, which we're trying to get out of.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm hearing no labels. There shouldn't be labels around food.
Well, yeah, we should. I think we should just try to avoid it. Now, the food industry knows we're seeking labels, but the more we can at least approach it, recognizing, okay, like I am not going to view it that way. This might be portrayed onto me and I can respond and look at it differently.
Nice.
I like that mentality. What else, Lindsay? Is there anything else that you want people to think about as they're working their way towards ditching the diet mentality?
Oh, I mean, we could keep going for a really long time, but
maybe we should have you back.
That would be great.
It's going to be difficult to find her.
Yeah, I don't think Jeff knows where to find me. Oh, I don't. I think the only other thing that I would say is really watch out for certain resources that just aren't helpful. So if you need to get rid of social media accounts, just stop following them. If you need to set some boundaries that make sense, maybe it's not buying certain books anymore. Maybe it's throwing away certain books. That would be a way to at least change your environment so you're not seeing so much of it.
I've heard you talk before about throwing out your scale.
Oh, okay. There's that too. Yeah, like that for some could be really tough because there's such an attachment to it, but really questioning, like, why do I need this in my bathroom? What's the why?
It's pretty actionable. I hope not too many of our listeners live in apartment buildings and they start throwing their scales out windows without looking down below before.
Yeah.
However, it's a killed great by strategy. Scale.
Yeah, look down first.
Yeah. Look down first.
Yeah.
This has been great, Lindsay.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you guys for having me.
Thank you.
I think folks are well on their way to ditching the diet mentality. And just like any of our episodes, start small. Start with a few of these actionable steps that have been shared today. And really believe that this will continue to be a process. It's not going to happen overnight. But you can start to enjoy food more.
And we've talked before about SkyTerraAtHome.com. And on SkyTerraAtHome.com, you can find a whole bunch of recipes that Lindsay has put together. You can find notes from our lectures, a lot of really great resources if you're just trying to change your thinking. Thanks again, Lindsay.
You're so welcome. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Lindsay.
The Inspired Intentions podcast is a production of SkyTerra Wellness. Special thanks to our executive producer, Alan Broyhill. Send us your questions and comments to inspiredintentions@skyterrawellness.com. And rate and review us with 5 stars on iTunes and everywhere podcasts can be found. Join us next week as we cut through the unrealistic noise on diets and fitness and show you how healthy living fits seamlessly into your already busy life. Thanks, everybody.